So Tess on the Bay is the Mishnah, the first Mishnah. Mishnah says, Hasumra ene goyla, blind person who kills somebody b'shogeg, does not go in Golos, divi Rabbi Yehuda. So says Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir ene goyla, Rabbi Meir says he would go into Golos.
He doesn't see,
but nevertheless, if it's still a case where, for example, like we learned before, where the axe head flies off or whatever, then Rabbi Meir would hold that he's still responsible, no different than anybody else. We'll see in the Gemara why. Hasoina ene goyla, somebody who hates another person and then ends up killing him, b'shogeg, ene goyla, he does not go into golos because there's good reason to think that, maybe it wasn't so b'shogeg. Rabbi Yossi says,
what do we say?
So Rabbi Yehuda would be saying, the Tanakhama rather would be saying that he doesn't go into golos, he doesn't necessarily get executed either because there wasn't Edim Basra. But he wouldn't go into Golos. The Golos wouldn't be a kapara for him because there's reason to be concerned that it may have been Karev Lamezi. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says on the side here that Rabbi Yossi says that actually Hasona Nerag, the Hasona who kills can actually be executed, Meshu Kamur, because he is like a Mord. Now what happened to Hasra? We'll see in the Gemara. Rabbi Shimon, Yesh Sona Golov, Yesh Sona Shena Golov. Rabbi Shimon says that it depends. Not necessarily like the Tanakhama that he never goes into Golos. It can happen. Sometimes a Sona can also go into Golos. Zachwal, the rule is, Kol Shu Yocholoyim L'Das Harag, if there's any way in which you can say he possibly might have killed him knowingly, let's say, for example, so what? We had at the beginning of the Perek examples where, let's say, a guy is lowering a barrel and the rope snaps and it drops and kills the guy. That it is conceivable that it was Lagas. Maybe he had to cut through the rope part way or whatever. Yeah, the Shaloi Lagas Harag, but if you know for sure that it cannot possibly have been Lagas, as we'll see examples in the Gemara, Harez Agola, then he would still go into Golos even though he's a son. Okay, so three different opinions. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan. Let's talk first about this that it said in the Mishnah that we have the Machloikis, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, whether a Summa, whether a blind person, goes into Golos. So what's the basis of the machlokes? The pasuk says, the pasuk describes that a person kills another person b'shogeg, and he uses the expression below the ois, without him seeing. That means prap l'suma, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says that comes to exclude a blind person. Ois means seeing. It's a noun. I guess loshen Torah versus loshen Chachamim. I don't know. Whatever it is. Anyway. Below the ois, without seeing, prat l'suma, meaning as opposed to a blind person, because below the ois implies that this is a person normally he would have been able to see. In this case, he didn't see that there was a person there and he accidentally killed him. A blind person never can see. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, on that basis, that's why Rabbi Yehuda says, therefore the pasuk is telling us a suma never goes into Golos. Rabbi Meir says just the opposite. Below the ois, l'rabbis l'suma. On the contrary, the word below the ois comes to include a blind person. My time is Rabbi Yehuda. So, okay, what's Rabbi Yehuda's reason? Where did he get the below the ois means to exclude the blind person? Like this, dichtiv, because you have a pasuk elsewhere in the Torah. The below the ois that we were quoting was from Parshas Matan. So there's two major places in the Torah that the psukim from them have been brought earlier in the parak. There's two major places in the Torah that discuss the ginim of a retzeach b'shugaga. You have a few other places where it talks briefly about the Arei Mikvah, but the major places are in Parshas Matan, where it deals at great length with all these dinim, when it's considered b'shogeg, when it's considered b'mezid, and then you have a shorter piece in Parshas Shoftim that talks about it. So below the ois is in Parshas Maaseh. There's a longer piece in Maaseh and a shorter piece in Shoftim, and then there's a single pasuk about it in Mishpatim, and that's about it. There's also in Vaschanan that talks about when Moshe set aside the Arei Mikvah. So like this. So the below the ois that we quoted was from Maaseh. Now we're going to quote a pasuk from Shoftim, which we've quoted this pasuk earlier in the parak a few times. The pasuk says, "D'chtiv v'asher yoveh es re'ehu bayar." It says if a person comes in together with somebody else into the forest, and then there he's chopping wood, and he accidentally kills the guy. So that would imply afilu suma. Now there it just says generically, he comes into the forest. That would imply it doesn't matter whether he's blind or not. As long as he's chopping wood and accidentally kills the guy, he goes into Golos. Also, below the oath, Mase. Then you have the below the oath from Mase. That comes to be a mute and say, but not if he's a person who never would be able to see, namely a blind person. So there you go. That's where we see that a blind person is potter.
So that's outside the yar?
No, it means, in other words, in Shoftim, the Torah is telling us a general rule. Two people go into a forest, one of them is chopping wood, accidentally kills the other guy, then he goes into Golos. The Lord of Oath modifies that and says, but not if he's a person who never would be able to see. It has to be somebody who, in this case, he didn't notice that the other guy was within range and he accidentally killed him. So now the question is on Rameir. But Rameir, what does Rameir answer to that? He says it's true, below the oath lamayit, fine, but the lizas lamayit that you also have in the words, in the pasuk in Shoftim, in the pasuk in Maaseh, actually, where it says b'vlidas. No, it is in Shoftim. Sorry, in the previous pasuk to this one mentioned that the person the orim mikvot are designed for people, for somebody who kills somebody else b'vlidas when he didn't hate him from beforehand. Right. So b'vlidas is also mute.
How can he have b'vlidas and have das?
No, that's the point. No, it's both. So that's what Rameir says. Below the oath lamayit, with lidas lamayit, you have two miyotim. One with the pasuk in Maaseh that says that he didn't see. The other one in Shoftim that says that he didn't know the guy was there.
He did not see. He didn't have a vision.
No, below the oath means he didn't see him.
He didn't see him.
That's a miyot. With lidas is also lamayit. Have a miyot, ha miyot. So therefore, you have two miyotim. And we know that in miyotach miyotach olorabas, when you have one miyot and then another miyot, then on the contrary, it comes to include.
Right.
So therefore, it comes to include the blind person, as long as he had some reasonable way of knowing that the guy was there, as we learned earlier in the Perek, about there still has to be some reasonable way for him to suppose that somebody might be there, like the case of the Ashbo, where sometimes people do use it, etc., whatever, yeah. One idea of this in miyotach miyotach olorabas, basically, is the idea you have the one thing is being the mayat, is being the mayat, a whole class of people. Then within that, you have a mute on the mute, meaning there's somebody who otherwise would have been excluded and now is being included. Now he's being excluded from the exclusion, right. Therefore he's being included back in, namely the blind person. That's Rameir. But Rabbi Yehuda, what would Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? Why doesn't he say it's mute on the mute? Because Bivlidas, Prathama Skaven, would also exclude. Rabbi Yehuda said, Bivlidas would come to exclude the case of Miskaven, the case that we had at the beginning of the Perek, where, for example, a person was intending to kill an animal and accidentally kill the yid or whatever. So the pasuk Bivlidas implies that he had no intention to kill at all. Therefore, that's not a mute to say that there's a certain class of people who should be pasuk from going into Golos. Therefore, you only have the one mute from below to earth, and therefore it excludes the blind person. And the halacha is tackled like Rabbi Yehuda. The Yerushalmi actually, by the way, gives an interesting different reason why Rabbi Yehuda would say that the blind person doesn't go into Golos, because Rabbi Yehuda in general holds elsewhere, and in Baba Kama, I think it is, that a blind person is potter from Kol Mitzvah Tamur Spatara. So therefore, he'd be potter from Golos just as he's potter from every other. In that, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. But in that particular detail, the halacha is that blind people are high in all the mitzvahs.
But in this particular case,
for the reasons that the Gemara is discussing over here, and for the reasons that our Gemara is discussing over here, then the halacha ends up being like Rabbi Yehuda. Because we are using the mirror to
when
be like that.
Usually
between the mayor and Rabbi Yehuda, yeah, usually the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, yeah. Then we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yosi, we said we had a three-way machlokus about a soni. The Tanakhama had said he doesn't go into Golos because he's korach l'mezid. Rabbi Yosi said that he's actually chayav mitzah. And Rabbi Shimon had said it depends. Sometimes he goes into Golos, sometimes not. So the question is, That's the question. How can you execute him if there was no hasra?
Maybe there was.
If there was, then there's obviously no machlokus. Then there's nothing to talk about, yeah. The answer is Masnissin Rabbi Yosi by Rehudi. Our Mishnah, when it says Rabbi Yosi, doesn't mean plain Rabbi Yosi, which is Rabbi Yosi by Chalafta. It means it's actually Rabbi Yosi by Rehudi. The Tanya, and we learn in a Braise, Rabbi Yosi, which we learned in Sanhedrin, Rabbi Yosi by Rehudi, Chover in a Tzarech Hasra, a Chover, a Taman Chacham, does not need Hasra. L'fishle Nitna Hasra will happen then Shogig will Mezid, because the whole purpose of Hasra is to distinguish between Shogig and Mezid, because the Taman Chacham, he obviously knows what he's doing. Therefore, Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda would say it's possible to execute a person Okay, but then we would know that he lost his memory. It's not going to happen all of a sudden, like one day. Then I'm conscious. He'd need Asura, yeah. We would take it on a case-by-case basis. But in general, when we know that the person knows what he's doing, then Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Hoda would say there's no reason to give, there's no need to give him Asura. So very well, then, in that case, if this person who is a Talmid Chacham also is a Sone, then according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Hoda, you could execute him.
How can a Talmid Chacham be a Sone?
Unfortunately, it can happen. A person can be a Talmid Chacham and still not
be a
He can't be a he's not a very good he's not a Talmid Chacham with very good midas, but nevertheless he still knows his stuff, he still knows what's also and what's motive.
To be a Sone.
Okay, if you want to get technical about it, there is a case where you are allowed to be a Sone, namely namely the case where you know that somebody did an Aveda but there's not enough evidence to take him to basis.
Right. Excluding this case.
But even then you don't have the right to kill him. But okay, fine. But yes, whatever it is. But the point is, he knows his stuff. He knows what's also and what's not. But yeah, he also Okay. Then we said Rabbi Shimon Omi Yesh Sone Gola V'Chola. We said that Rabbi Shimon says it depends. Sometimes a Sone goes into Gola, sometimes not. Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Ketzad Omer Rabbi Shimon Yesh Sone Gola V'Yesh Sone Shene Gola. What does Rabbi Shimon mean when he say that it depends? Sometimes a Sone goes into Gola and sometimes not. Depends. Nifsak Gola. Nishmak ena gola. If, let's say, for example, he was lowering a barrel and the rope broke, then he would go into golos. Because if the rope broke, for example, because according to the girsa we have here, wait, we'll talk in a minute that Rashi brings a different girsa, but according to the girsa that we have here in the Gemara. Then it would mean, for example, so if the rope broke, for example, then presumably that's not Ladas. We're not going to assume that he cut through the rope, like I was saying before. But Pashtus, I guess we could examine the rope afterwards and see that it wasn't cut.
He's still for sure.
It's still a shogig of the kind that if he wasn't a Sone, he would definitely go to the Orem Mitzvah. That's classic shogig of the type that goes to Orem Mitzvah, as we learned at the beginning of the parak. The chiddush is over here. What Rav Shimon is saying is, even though he's a Sone, nevertheless we say that we shouldn't assume that that is something that he did deliberately. But Pashtus, it was an accident, same as could have happened to anybody else.
Not obvious that you could.
Wait. On the other hand, nishmat ena gola. On the other hand, if the rope slipped out of his hands and then the barrel fell on the other guy and killed him, well then ena gola, that would be the case where he does not go into golos. Because then there's more. No, he wouldn't be chayiv nisa because Rav Shimon wouldn't hold. Would still say he needs asura,
right.
Not like Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Hoda, but you still can't say he goes into golos because you have a very strong reason to believe that it wasn't so accidental that the rope slipped out of his hand. It may have been a little more purposeful because he's a sone to the other guy. By the way, the definition of a sone for this purpose that Rambam holds is if they haven't spoken to each other in 3 or more days out of anger.
And if someone out of anger it has to be.
Yeah, no, we're not talking about. For example, you're talking about the guys that you're not talking about that your WhatsApp friends, your WhatsApp friends or whatever, and you haven't texted each other in 3 days. We're not talking about that. We're talking about it. Yeah,
but if you know that you meet someone on the street and he never says hello to you and you know him.
I don't think that would be called a sone. A sone is before they used to have a normal communication with each other, and now for 3 days they've they've stopped talking because one of them is angry at the other, or they're mutually angry at each other. Arab Shuda Goyen wants to say more than that. A sone would have to be where you know that he's harassing the other guy and trying to get his livelihood and so forth. Okay, anyway, whatever. It's not so obvious. Halacha is not like that. Halacha is just like what the Rambam says, as long as he hasn't spoken to him in 3 days. We learned in Sanhedrin a similar concept, a similar definition of sone as far as edus, where we said that we had an opinion over there that a sone is possible edus if they haven't spoken to each other in 3 days. The halacha is not like
that.
We learned that in Sanhedrin. We said over there that halacha is not like that because we don't suspect Jews of testifying falsely just because of that. But okay. Anyway.
Does that mean you also should always be in communication with friends? You should always talk to them?
I guess so. Yeah. I guess so. Okay. All right. Anyway, so that's Rav Shimon gives an example. So this is what Rav Shimon means when he says that sometimes a sone goes into golos and sometimes not. It depends whether it's something that you could argue is something that's more likely to have been an accident versus something that he may have done purposely.
Slipping a rope, that's
so slipping is suspicious, but breaking is not.
So much.
Okay. The question is, but we learn in a braisa that Reb Shimon says he never goes into Golos unless his machlotze slips out of his hand. Machlotze, Rashi says, is the magila that we learned at the beginning of the perek, this thing that you use for smoothing out the plaster or the tar or whatever on a roof. So he only goes into Golos, Reb Shimon says, if he drops this tool and kills the other guy with it. So kasha nifsaka nifsak, kasha nishma ta nishma. So now you have a contradiction. So you have a contradiction between the two cases of it breaking.
What's the contradiction?
The contradiction is like this. We have one braisa where Reb Shimon says that if the rope broke, for example, then he would go into Golos. But if the rope slipped out of his hand, he would not, because likely to be Korv Lameis.
Right.
But now you have another braisa that says, on the contrary, Reb Shimon says he would not go into Golos unless, for example, he dropped the tool and killed the other guy. Like we learned at the beginning of the parrot, and it slipped out of his hand and fell on the guy and killed him, Reb Shimon would say that even with the case of the Slaine, the same rule applies. So you have a contradiction about Nifsak, where the first braisa says that if the rope broke when he's lowering a barrel, for example, then he would go into Golos. The second braisa seems to be saying that not, only if he actually drops the actual item. And Nishmat is also a kasha, because the first braisa said Nishmat ain't a gola, because it's suspicious, and the second braisa says, on the contrary, Nishmat is when he goes into Golos. So, the answer is, Nifsek and Nifsek Lakasha, there's no contradiction between the two cases where it breaks Hava Ohev Hava Sonei. One case is talking about where they are friends, and the other one is talking about where they're enemies. In other words, when we say that when the first braisa Nifsek Gola, that is talking about anybody. That's talking about whether they love each other or whether they hate each other. Either way, Nifsek is not likely to be something that happened on purpose.
We're not talking about a Sonei.
We're not necessarily, in that first braisa, we're not only talking about a Sonei. We're saying generically that Reb Shimon is saying, as a general rule, Nifsek Gola, always. Whether he's an Ohev, whether he's a Sonei, because Nifsek is not likely to be something that happened on purpose. Again, we would examine the robe afterwards and see if there was evidence of tampering with it. But if there wasn't, then we would say that it was a fluke. And therefore, even a Sonei would go into Golos. Nishmat and Nishmat like Kasha, and the contradiction about between the two braises about if he drops the tool or whatever, or drops the rope, is also not a Kasha. Horevi v'horabanan, because we have the machloekas earlier in the perek about between Rebbe and the Rabbanan. Namely, we have the case over there where the axe head slipped off the handle. Does he go into Golos or not? Is he chayev to go into Golos or not? We had Rebbe versus the Rabbanon over there, where Rebbe said he doesn't go into Golos. He would only go into Golos if a piece of the wood that he was chopping flew off and hit the other guy, and the Rabbanon say that he would. So therefore, on the same basis over here, so Nishmat, for example, would be that if you drop the rope, that would be the equivalent of the axe head slipping off of the axe head slipping off the handle. So therefore, so Rebbe would say, so the Chachamim would say that it would be like this then. So according to the Reb Shimon would be talking, either the two braises, so Reb Shimon would be talking one according to Rebbe and one according to the Chachamim. If we say with the Chachamim in the earlier Mishnah that when the axe head slips off, you go into Golos, then it would also follow if the rope slipped out of your hand and now you have nothing left in your hand, then also the same thing, you could go into Golos for that. On the other hand, according to Rebbe, who says that if the axe head slips off, you do not go into Golos, by the same logic, if the rope, when you're lowering the barrel, slipped out of your hand, you also wouldn't go into Golos. So therefore, it comes out, actually, Rashi says, if you go like that, it means if you take Reb Shimon and Rebbe's opinions and combine them, it would mean that there would never be a case where a Sonei would go into Golos. At least if Nishma. If Nifsak, maybe, because we said Nifsak would be either an Oyev or a Sonei. You could actually, especially because Rebbe was Reb Shimon Talmud. Anyway, the Rashi himself.
So they have the same opinion, both of them.
Not necessarily. It could mean that they agree on It can mean that they agree on the differences within a sonnet. They're not going to say like the Tanakhama of our Mishnah or Rabbi Yossi the Yehuda in our Mishnah that the sonnet never goes into galus or maybe even can be executed. They would both agree maybe that there are cases that depend. Sometimes he would, sometimes he wouldn't. But they would disagree on the exact parameters when he would, when he wouldn't. Anyway, Rashi says that Rashi actually says that he doesn't really like that Gersa, this that we just described, because among other things, why should we compare the case where the rope slipped out of his hands? Why should we compare that to the axe handle flying off? Both of them are nishmat. It's true. Both of them is something slipped, but it's not really so similar. One is you're not holding anything, and the other one is you're still holding the axe handle for one thing. Also,
what slides out, the metal part?
Well, yeah, the metal part. But the metal part, you're left holding the handle. Yeah.
That's why he doesn't like it.
That's one reason he says. What do you mean that you're going to say Nifsat Gola is talking about it could be either an Ohev or a Sone? The first Braita that we said, that Rabbi Shimon said Yesh Sone Gola, Yesh Sone Shane Gola, and then he continues Nifsat Gola. So obviously he's still talking about a Sone. What are you all of a sudden telling us that first Braita could be talking about an Ohev as well? Rashi doesn't like that Gersa, actually. His Gersa, rather, is that just the opposite. The two cases of Nishmat are an Ohev versus a Sone. If it drops out of his hand, then it depends. If he's a Sone, he doesn't go into Golos. If he's an Ohev, he does. Because with a Sone, you could argue that maybe he deliberately dropped it and made it look like an accident. With an Ohev, there's no reason to suspect that. And then Nifsek, that would be Rebbe versus the Rabbanan, where you say if the axe handle flies off, would be the equivalent of the rope breaking. Because in either case, you have your left holding part of the rope and the other half broke off, versus your left holding the axe handle and the axe head flew off. Tosus points out another thing also, that even if we do combine together Rebbe's and Reb Shimon's opinions, you still could say Reb Shimon would
what
say.
What would be the combination if you combine Rebbe and Reb Shimon?
So that's according to the first Gersa that we were discussing, which Rashi says he doesn't like. It would mean that according to Rebbe, a Sone would never go into Golos. So then Tosfos points out there actually could be a case. Let's say, for example, the guy himself, so the Sone himself, falls off the roof and lands on the other guy and kills him. There's no reason, according to anybody, to suspect that he did it, even though he's a Sone, to suspect that he did deliberately. He wouldn't endanger his own life in order to try and kill the other guy. Therefore, even in that case, we could still agree that we would treat him same as an Ohev and send him into Golos.
But that's a bit of an extreme case.
Okay, but nevertheless, it's still okay. The Aruch HaNeir points out, by the way, I think it's the Aruch HaNeir anyway, it points out that actually we know that Reb Shimon has a general concept in the Torah. He says that Darshin and Taima Dekra, when the Torah gives us an exception, we try to look, which when the Torah gives us a din, we try to look for the reason behind the din and say when to apply it or not. So the Tanakhama of our Mishnah doesn't hold of that concept. He would say the Torah tells us, who loy sone loy, implying if he's a sone, he doesn't go into Golos, period, no exception. Whereas Reb Shimon would say, Darshin and Taima Dekra, we still got to see, is it likely to have been something that he did out of sin, or is it likely to have been a true accident? Mishnah said, Lahechon Golos. Okay, so now where do these Roitzchim B'Shgoga go into Golos? L'Orei Miklot, they go to the Orei Miklot, L'Sholosh Shiv'Evra Yarden, L'Sholosh Shiv'Evra Knan. There are the three Orei Miklot that are in Evra Yarden, and the three that are in Eretz Knan in Eretz Yisrael proper. And when Mashiach comes, as we know, the famous thing that it says in the Pasuk, there'll be three more set up in the land. The Kenyan can easily become more the extra land. That'll be. This is a machloket that we learned in Baba Basra, a few different opinions, what exactly they are. The most commonly well-known opinion is that those are the lands of Edom, Moab, and Ammon, which more or less those are about half of modern Jordan. The other half being Eber Yavin, which was originally given to the Shvat de Moreh.
To his grandmother, David, was a descendant of Edom?
Of Moab.
Of Moab?
Of Moab. Was a Moab here, yeah.
Right, but Moab has nothing to do with Edom.
Moab, Ammon, and Edom are three nations that are descended.
That's what I was asking.
Okay, so there are three. So you have Ammon and Moab are descended from Lot, who are his daughters,
Lot,
from Lot, which is the nephew of Abraham. Edom is descended from Esau, which is the grandson of Abraham.
Yes.
Those lands were given to relatives and descendants of Abraham that are not the Jewish people. The loss of Lot, they'll be given to the Jewish people.
They would have given to the descendants of Abraham.
Well,
Ammon
and Moab are not descendants of Abraham, but they're the descendants of his nephew.
Right.
And then loss of Lot, they'll be given to us. Okay. Anyway. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Eish shloisha arim titnu ba'evil ayarden." As the pasuk says, three cities you should set aside in Evil ayarden. Ves shloisha arim titnu ba'etz kanan v'gemar, and three you should set aside in Eretz Kanan. Adshel and Nivcho v'sholosh shabayit Yisrael lohoyer sholosh ve'evil ayarden kolte. Before the three in Eretz Yisrael were selected, the three that are in Evil ayarden did not yet accept. We're not yet a refuge for the Rotskin. In other words, we know from Parshas Vayis Kanan that Moshe set aside the three in Evil HaYarden while he was still alive, or the Abdul Moshe Shalosh Arim, as well as we'll learn about the Gemara. But those three did not take effect until they designated the three that are in Eretz Yisrael proper, which is found later on in Sefer Yoshua. They did that.
Yoshua did it.
Yes.
So what are those Rotskin do until they designate
Hangar? Garnished, they had them as Mizbeach, actually. The Mizbeach, we'll learn later on Daf Yud Beis, that the Mizbeach technically could serve as a temporary refuge for them.
Mizbeach?
Yeah, Mizbeach. You hold on to it, and then as long as you're there, then the Goyla drum can't get you. Okay, well, what you would do when they break camp, they finish. You got to watch you back then, I guess. Okay. Anyway, I think actually it says someplace. I might be wrong about this, but I think it says that someplace that actually Midbar Machna Levia was the equivalent of the Arim Mikvot, just like in Eretz Yisrael. The Arim Mikvot were the places where the Kohanim and Levim live. I don't remember that for sure, though. Okay. Anyway. All right. Shenema Shesh Arim Mikvot Tiyena. The pasuk says there shall be six Arim Mikvot, meaning Adchi Yoshesh Shem Kofas Kachas. You have to have all six of them for any of them to be effective. Now you have roads leading straight from one to the other. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Tochem Machaderech. You should prepare yourself the road. Vishilashta v'gomer, and you should divide the length of Eretz Yisrael into three parts, as we'll see in the Gemara how it is done. You have the roads are straight, and you have to make sure there's no obstacles in the roads and so forth, so that the Rotskin can get there as quick as possible. For most of the land, Shneitim and Chachamim, when a Ritzeach
cannot be attacked on the roads,
they could. That's why the roads have to be as straight and wide as possible so that they can get there as fast as possible. We'll talk about that actually in the Gemara on Yudam and Beis. We'll get into that point whether the Ritzeach can be killed on the way to the Mikvot. We'll get to it. Anyway. They would give, the Beis Din would assign two Taman Chachamim to travel along with the Ritzeach when he's going to the Ir Mikvot. Shema Yavgenu Baderech, lest the Goyal Adam meet him up on the way and kill him on the way. V'yidabrei lo this way. The Taman Chachamim can talk to the guy and try to calm him down and tell him, look, you know, Fort, it was a shogeg, don't hold it too much against him, etc. The Rambam learns that this Shemotzun and Shnevetim Nechachamim, by the way, is talking about after the guy, we're going to learn later on in the Gemara, that's actually, we're going to learn in the next line of our Mishnah, that the rule was, as soon as a person killed, he would run away to the Ir Miklat, then Beis Din would bring him from there and judge him and see whether he's Chayiv Misa or Chayiv Golos or whatever. The two Taman Chachamim are when he's going there for the second time, when he's being sent there after the verdict has been delivered. Then they decided it's for sure. So then they give him the two Taman Chachamim to accompany him. Rav Meir says you don't need the Taman Chachamim. He can speak on his own behalf. As the pasuk says, this is the word of the Ritzeach, meaning the Ritzeach is expected to speak up to defend himself.
That's
the Gemara is going to point out, that the Chachamim answered to Rav Meir. Nevertheless, sometimes it's more effective when you have somebody else do it for you. Okay, this is what Rav Meir holds.
If you're going to tell me the Chachamim, wouldn't you say you're going to try to talk the guy out? Why shouldn't he have like strong people to be able to defend him or tell him that if you kill him, you're going to get killed?
No, because it's not true. If the girl that don't kill him, he's entitled to. He's
going to our Mikvah.
But he's not in the Ur Mikvah yet. If he kills him in the Ur Mikvah, sure, he's going to be high.
Probably
he's going to kill him too. No, he's not going to go that far.
Yeah. suppress any evidence?
Nah. We don't suspect. We don't suspect the guy. We suspect that in the heat of it, he's going to be so angry at this guy who killed his relative that he's going to go and kill him. And he has the right to, as a girl at dawn. We'll learn later on that maybe even he has a mitzvah too. We have an opinion, but whatever. There's no reason to suspect he killed the Talmud Chachamim. Okay, Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda, b'tchila echad shoyvid v'echad meizid makdimin l'orim. What happens is like this. To start with, when a person kills, and you're saying, why is he called a tzeach? Because first he killed. Whether it was b'shoyvid, whether it was a meizid, the first thing he does is he runs off to the nearest ir mikvah. Or based in shochan u'mubiyin oisim isham, then based in sends and brings him from there to stand trial. Mishin is chayiv misa based in haragur. If it turns out that he was chayiv misa, then based in executes him. V'shalon is chayiv misa paturu. If it turns out he's not chayiv misa, then they send him free. And then it depends, by the way. If it was an earnest, then that's it. The goyel adam can't get him. He's safe. If it was kor, if it was no. Okay, you have four possibilities. It can be that there was b'mezid, and there was eidim b'hasra, or if one's a b'yesid, if you hold it, maybe if it's a tamar chacham, he doesn't need hasra, whatever, and then you execute him. You can have, he was shogeg kodav l'mezid. In that case, he is potter from going to the yomikla. The yomikla's not going to help him, but he's going to have to watch his back for the rest of his life because the goel adam can come after him. There can be where it's real shogeg, the cases that we learned earlier in the parak, then he goes to the yomikla, and that'll protect him as long as he's there. And then there can be where it's shogeg kodav l'oynes, like the case we had over there, for example, of the garbage heap that nobody ever uses, and then and he's throwing stones into there, and all of a sudden somebody sits there, that's shogeg kodav l'oynes, and then he's not only potter from the imit, but the goel adam can't get him either, so he's safe. So those are the four possibilities. Okay. V'shalon is chayiv misa patru, so if he's not chayiv misa, then they potter him. And again, within that, you have two possibilities. Either he's potter and he never has to worry about the goel adam again, or he's potter, but he's going to have to watch his back for the rest of his life. Mishin is chayiv galus, and if he's chayiv galus, machzir noisa l'mekoma, then they return him to the mikvah that he ran away to originally. Shenema, as opposed to the... That's when the two Talmid Chacham come with him. Shenema, as opposed to the shivu oisa edel, as opposed to says that the edel, meaning the Sanhedrin, the Chachamim, the based in, should return him to the mikvah where he originally ran away to. Moshe Rabbeinu designated three Orim Mikvot in Evra Yardin, or Kenegdom Hivdo Yeshua Be'eretz Kanaan. Corresponding to them, Yeshua designated three in Eretz Kanaan. They were in rows like the rows of a vineyard. They were each pair of cities was at the same latitude. Because the Eretz Yisrael had to be divided up evenly, as we're going to see. Chevron be Yehuda can get better by Midbar. So Chevron in Yehuda is directly across on the same latitude as Betzer in the desert in the land of Reuben. Shechem behar Ephraim can get Romis Bagilod. Shechem and Ephraim in the middle of Eretz Yisrael is directly opposite Romis Bagilod in Eivra Yadin. And Kedesh behar Naphtali. Shem is in the middle of Eretz Yisrael. And across the Yarden, at the same latitude is Ramos Gilad. Yeah.
But Ramos Gilad is big, and it goes.
The Gilad is a big area. Ramos is a specific city in Gilad.
So where is the corresponding city? Ramos is it?
Ramos is the name of the city in Gilad,
and it's corresponding.
It's on the same latitude as Shem in Eretz Yisrael. So once you know where Shem is, then you go across that line of latitude, and you'll find Ramos. Yeah. And Kedesh, Har Naphtali, Golan Baboshan, and Kedesh, and Har Naphtali in the north of Eretz Yisrael is opposite on the same line of latitude as Golan in the Boshan, in the Boshan, more or less someplace in the Golan Heights now. Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Now, the pasuk says v'shilashta. The pasuk says you should divide in thirds. So what does that mean? Shiyu mishaloshin. It means that they should be equal. Mishaloshin means equal. Means there should be three equal distances, like this. Shiyehei midorim lechevron, lechevron l'shem. There should be the same distance from the southern border of Eretz Yisrael to Chevron. Then an equal distance from Chevron to Shem. An equal distance from Chevron l'shem to Shem l'kedesh. An equal distance from Chevron to Shem as from Shem to Kedesh. Or Shem l'kedesh to Kedesh l'tzapan. And an equal distance from Shem to Kedesh as from Kedesh to the northern border. From a first on the pasuk say, for example, if we take it that Eretz Yisrael is 400 by 400 parsecs, is a famous statement. Then it would mean, for example, so you'd have 100 parsecs from the southern border to Chevron, another 100 parsecs north of that would bring you to Shem, another 100 parsecs north of that would bring you to Kedesh, and another 100 parsecs north of that would bring you to the northern border. It's not really geographically accurate. There aren't 100 pirates there from Chevron to Shechem or from Shechem to Kadesh, but okay, that would be the idea. That would be the schematically. A pirate says about 2.5 or 3 miles. There's about 2.5 or 3 miles. So 100 pirates there, something like 250, 300 miles, is not that long a distance from Chevron to Shechem or from Shechem to Kadesh. Okay, but whatever. That's the idea behind it. So the first thing we got, okay. So the question is, we got to ask then, in that case, it's not proportional. But Evra Yadin slash Eretz Yisrael slash, what's the logic that there should be 3 Ore Mitzvot in Evra Yadin, where there were only 2.5 Shabbatim, and in Eretz Yisrael proper, where there were 9.5 Shabbatim, you have also three Ore Mitzvot. Why? No, but why should it be? There should be a smaller number in Evra Yadin, a smaller population. Exactly. The reason is because Roitzchim are more common in Gilad, which is in Evra Yarden. No, why could you hide in Evra Yarden any more than you could in Eretz Yisrael proper?
Because it's spontaneous.
Large parts of Western Eretz Yisrael, of Eretz Yisrael proper, are also mountainous. That's not the reason.
Yidden,
we're talking about the pastures, but wait, let's learn the next two lines, and then we'll. Yeah, but the western side of the Yarden is also forested. No, that's not the issue. Wait, let's learn the next two lines, and I'll tell you a number of different points that the poet should bring up. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, Gilad Kiryas Peleov, and Gilad is a city of people who do evil, who do injustice. Akuba midam. It is akuba with blood. My akuba midam. What is that akuba midam? I'm going to show you open lives in the pasuk that they're lying in wait. They're ambushing in order to kill. Now, why tactics should that happen more in Gilad? So first of all, Gilad has less of a kedusha than Eretz Yisrael proper. So therefore, in various aspects. How so? I want to know. It's higher.
So the mountains, the Gilad.
They may be higher geographically. That doesn't mean that it's higher kedusha.
No,
kedusha. Okay, so we're talking about kedusha though. Gilad has less of a Avrayad has less kedusha than Eretz Yisrael proper. So therefore, that's one thing. You have less of a schus to protect them. There's also different ideas that Mephoshim talk about. really a big point that many of the Mephoshim deal with the question is, if we're saying there's more Roitzchim there, that's Roitzchim amazing. Here we're talking about Ore Mitzvot, which are for Roitzchim B'Shogeg. So why should more Roitzchim amazing require more Ore Mitzvot, which are meant for the Shogeg? So there's a few different answers. One of them from the Ramban, I think, is you had in Gilad more, because there were more Roitzchim amazing, you had therefore more people who would also do it B'Shogeg and who would do it amazing and pretend that it was B'Shogeg and make it look like it was a Shogeg. So therefore you needed that. You have an idea, we just said, that both the Shogeg and the Mazid originally runs the Ore Mitzvot before Beis Din calls them back and tries them. So therefore you need the Ore Mitzvot for there as well. We're going to learn on Omid Beis that's another reason. We're going to learn on Omid Beis the famous idea that if you have a person killed the Mazid but without Edim Basra, and you have another person who killed the Shogeg, but also without Adim, so there's no way to send him to the Mikvah. So the Eivishter arranges, they come to the same place, and the guy who killed B'Shogeg, for example, is descending a ladder, and the ladder breaks, and he falls on the other guy and kills him. So therefore they both get their, and there are Adim then, so therefore they both get their respective punishments. The guy underneath gets killed, and the guy above goes to the Mikvah. So therefore, because you had more Roitzchim B'Mezid in Gilad, you ended up having more Roitzchim B'Shogeg in order that they can get punished properly. So
there isn't more Roitzchim B'Shogeg than the Mazid.
But the point is, because you had Roitzchim B'Mazid, who didn't necessarily do it with Edim Bahasra, and therefore the Eivishter needs to arrange for them to be punished, a logical way of doing that is, as we'll learn on Amud Beis, is that you'd have a Roitzchim B'Shogeg who previously couldn't be sent to the Ore Mitzvot because there were no Edim. Now the Eivishter arranges that he's descending a ladder in the presence of Edim and falls on the other guy and kills him.
This was a Gilad, a Kiryas Poleh Avenue. Where's that from? What was it talking
it's
about?
It's a pasuk in Hosea. In Pshat, that's exactly what it's talking about. He's criticizing the Aseret HaShavatim, and in particular the Shavatim in Evra Yagin, for being careless with human life. But not just careless, what we're saying here in the Gemara, but actually trying to lying in ambush to kill. It's part of a whole parak with upgrading the Jewish people for their avarice. the next pasuk that we're going to quote, and then the Gemara is going to quote, and another pasuk in a second that comes back to back with this one. But that's the point. So there's a lot of different points over here. Another one is also because in Gilad there were more roots from Amazed, so therefore it's like it was more accepted to carry weapons over there. So like in Eretz Yisrael proper, let's say a Goel Adam would be afraid to go and try and kill the Retzeach B'Shogeg, because if he's carrying around weapons, people are likely to ask, "What are you doing?" They say it's unusual. Whereas in Gilad, because there were more murders were more common, and therefore people were more commonly carrying weapons, so therefore Goel Adam could more easily get away with it, and therefore you need more Orei Miklat proportionately in order to save the roots from B'Shogeg. Okay, those are a sampling of the different explanations. Okay.
Also, does it make any difference how many rotskin b'shogeg they are? They have to be spread out evenly, so that even if they're not that many rotskin, they want to be able to get to those.
Understood. But the point, the Gemara's question was that proportionally, if you have, let's say, 100,000 people in Eber HaYarden and you have 500,000 in Eretz Yisrael proper, then why do you have an equal number of Orei Miklat? Okay. Now we got to ask. Now, let's consider. We just said the distance from the southern border to Shechem and from the northern border to Kedesh is the same as the distance from Hebron to Shechem and from Kedesh to Shechem. So what does that mean? It comes out, therefore, like
the distance from
southern
border to Shechem.
We said that we divided Eretz Yisrael into four equal parts. Into four equal parts, and we put an Ur Mikvot at the border of each of the four, at the border where one part meets the next part.
Right.
So what does that mean? Let's consider. It means if somebody is on the southern border, he may have to travel. Let's use the figure as a 400 parasa that I was mentioning before. The Mepharshim say, even if it's not geographically accurate. Yeah. So let's say a person on the southern border kills B'Shogeg. Or Amazed for that matter, because you run through an Mitzvah immediately. He may have to go as much as 100 parasa to get to Hebron. Same thing if he's on the northern border. He may have to travel as much as 100 parasa to get to Kedesh. On the other hand, if he's in the middle of the country, the maximum he's going to have to go is 50 parasa, either to Hebron, south of him, or to Shechem, north of him. So that's the question.
If he's
somewhere in the middle.
Right.
So that's the next question. Why is it at the extreme ends of Eretz Yisrael, the Orei Miklat are further away from you, may have to travel more? Why is it in the middle of the country, you have less to travel to reach an Eretz Yisrael? The Torah should have made it that, let's say, that you divide Eretz Yisrael into six equal parts, let's say, and you put an Eretz Miklat in the middle, at the border between the first and the second part, and another one at the border between the third and the fourth, another one at the border between the fifth and the sixth, and that way, wherever you are, you have a maximum of, whatever it would be according to that, 80-something parasites to reach the nearest, to reach the Eretz Miklat.
Doesn't depend on the population census, where people live.
No. The Gemara was going to say later, actually, that the Orei Miklat are not supposed to be particularly big cities. They're supposed to be average size cities.
Right. Yeah. If you're in the middle of there's four bands, basically. Each one is 100 parsecs.
Right.
So if you're in the middle of a band, you're going to be equidistant with it.
Well, understood.
Which band you are.
Understood. But the point is, if you're at the edge, then you have 100 parsecs to go to reach
but any band.
No, if you're somewhere in the middle, if you're somewhere between Hebron and Shechem, the maximum you're going to have to go is 50 parasa to reach Hebron or 50 parasa to reach
right.
Shechem. Why do we do it that way instead of making it that no matter what, the maximum you're going to have to go is 80 parasa, 80, 83 or something parasa, 86, whatever. Why is it if you're in the middle of Eretz Yisrael, then you're closer to an Ur Mikvot? You have to go maximum 50, maximum 50 parasa. I'm going to buy the Shechem Namish Tichy Roitzim. So Abai says the reason is because in Shechem also Roitzim are more common. Now, Marashah says, granted, not as common as in Eber HaYarden, because otherwise we're back to the question, why three here and three here? But nevertheless, more common in Shechem than in the other areas in Eretz Yisrael.
What's the Nami doing? It shouldn't be Shechem, Tichy Roitzim?
No, Nami also, just like in Eber HaYarden, although not to the same extent. Dichtiv, and we know that from a pasuk. Again, it's another pasuk in Hosea, back to back with the previous one. Uchachake ish gdudim, like bands of people. Rashi on the pasuk over there brings two explanations of chake. One is it means like a trap that's used to catch fish. Like you have a school of fish trapped in a net. So here it's used as a metaphor for a group of people. And then Rashi says a second explanation over there that chake itself means a grouping, whatever. like a grouping, like a gang of people, chever koyanim, a group of koyanim, derech yirat chushechem of a goymer, on the way to Shechem they kill. Okay, on the simple meaning of the pasuk, Rashi says over there that Shechem over there doesn't mean Shechem, it means all together. Why we say koyanim? One second, my chever koyanim. Why are we calling them a group of koyanim? Amar Rav Elazar, shohim eschabrim la'ar nefashis, because it means these are gangs of people who join together to kill. In the same way, they gather together for a group, for this purpose, in the same way as Koyanim gather together in a group to go to the granaries to receive Truma and Devaya.
That's the ones we talked about.
In general, that's how Koyanim receive their Truma. But right. Here we're using that as a metaphor for the same way as you see groups of Koyanim going from granary to granary to collect their Truma. Here you have in the same way people are grouped together and joined together in order to go and kill.
Compared to Kohanim to these votes,
good question.
Okay.
Whatever. I don't know. And not necessarily. I mean, we find in other psukim that not all the Kohanim in those days were so on the up and up either. You know, see. Okay. Again, Rashi on the Pasuk over there says, and the other Mepharshim also say that Shechem over there on the simple meaning doesn't mean Shechem, it means together in a group. But still, like with one purpose, like Obdei Shechem Echad, but still, the fact that it uses the word Shechma for that purpose allows us to understand that it's related to the word Shechem. Fine. The question is, Betuleka, are you telling me then that from the Mishnah that there's only six Orim Mikot in the entire Eretz Yisrael? But the Pasuk continues, V'aleyam Titnu Aboyim Shtaimir. The Pasuk continues, on top of the six, you should designate 42 cities for the Levim. And we're going to learn later on in the Perek that for the most part, implying that there are 48 altogether. There are 48 altogether, not just six. And then later on, we're going to learn in the Perek that for the most part, they all have the same din. I'm going to buy it. The difference is, halolu kofas ben ladas ben shalal ladas. The difference is, the six are in mikvot, a koilet, they protect you, whether you know you're in there or whether you're not. Even if the Ritzeach ran away there not knowing that it's an Ir Mikvot and it's going to protect him, nevertheless it does. And different other Mephoshim point out different. No, it's not so obvious. And by the way, there's other explanations in Mephoshim what Shaloi Ladach can mean also. Imagine, for example, the guy is asleep and they carry him there in a bed.
Okay.
Yeah, whatever.
But he doesn't know.
Halalu, whereas the other 40...
Yeah.
No, the Goel Adam, if he kills him in an Ir Mikvot, it's Chayav.
If he gives me Levadat, I'm
sorry. In the six cities, it doesn't make a difference. That's what we're saying. In the six cities, in the other 42, Halalu, where the other 42, Ladat kills him. Pashtus. How do you know if it was Ladas or Shalai Ladas? I don't know. He meets up with him on the street and says, hey, you know, what brings you to the city? And the guy says, I don't know, I was just I'm just Tamazoi visiting. Oh, well, then in that case, then yeah. Okay. All right. Halalu, the other 42, Ladas, Kobus, Shalai Ladas, and in Kobus. Only if he goes there, Ladas, knowing that it's going to protect him, only then does it protect him. If not, then it doesn't. So that's the difference between the 6 and the 42. At the end of the parak, we're going to learn another difference in halacha between them. But other than that, for the most part, they're the same thing.
How about Ladas, that he has no halacha, that it's called? I'll call it only if he has Ladas for it.
Well, that's what Rashi mentioned. Shabarach shom ladas klita, or shaloi ladas klita, shaloi hayyadeh, shi kaleta. That he didn't know, for example, that it's kaleta that works with the 6, it doesn't work with the 42.
You better know this time. Which ones works and which ones don't
work. Fine. Now, we mentioned before that one of the Orei Mikot was Chevron. So the question is, a Chevron and Ir Mikot, who? You're telling me that Chevron was an Ir Mikot, but you have a pasuk that says, Vayitnu l'kolav as Chevron, kasha dibur Moshe. It says that they gave Chevron to Kolev, as Moshe had said. We know the famous thing that Kolev was the only one of the Meraglim who visited Chevron when they were traveling throughout Israel, to daven by the Maris Machpelah and beg the Eivish to save him from the Atzas Meraglim. Therefore, later on, the Eivishter says to Moshe that I'm going to give Kolev land in which he trod, in which he stepped, namely, Rashi says on the pasuk over there, Chevron. So eventually, Taka, once they conquered that area, they did that. They gave Kolev Chevron. So in that case, it belongs to the Kolev family. It's not an area. It's not an image, but the Orim Mikvot belonged to the Kohanim Levim.
Right.
The answer is Amar Abaye Parvadah. It means that they didn't give Kolev the city itself. They gave him the surrounding villages and suburbs and whatnot. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk actually says, there Ires Chatzereo, Nosna Lakoli Benifone. It says the fields around the city and the open villages around it, they gave to Koli. So the city proper was given to the Koyanim, and that became one of the six Ari Mikvah. The rest of the suburbs and the villages and the
Koyanim.
Yes, so among the 48 cities, you had about 12, I think, 12 or 13 of them, I think, were given to the Kohanim, and the rest were given to the Levim.
So the others to the Levim.
Yes, and they're scattered all over Israel. Each Israel had their territories. The Kohanim and
within
Levim.
Within their territories.
Each shevet was supposed to designate a couple of cities, anywhere between two and four cities in their Nachla that are supposed to go to the Kohanim and Levim. And then they did a girdle to see which ones are going to settle where. And this way, you have Kohanim and Levim scattered all over Israel to teach the people Torah and for the people to be able to give them Truma and Meiser and so forth. So that's it. So that's how Hebron was an Ir Mikvot, and at the same time was given to Kolev. The city itself went to the Kohanim. The surrounding areas went to Kolev. Okay. Next, we got to ask Kedesh Ir Mikvot Havoy. Are you telling me that Kedesh in Naphtali's territory was an Ir Mikvot? V'haksiv, but you have a pasuk in Yeshua when it's describing the territories of each of the Shvatim. It says, V'orim Mivzer, the walled cities, the fortified cities in Naphtali's territory were as follows. Hatsidim, Tser, V'chamas, Rakas, V'kineres, V'zomer. It lists a bunch of walled cities. One of them is V'kedesh, V'edrei, V'einchot. So one of the ones in that list is Kedesh. V'etanya, and we learn in a Braisa, they're not to be made as small little towns, because it won't be easy for the Ritzeach B'Shogeg to be able to get food over there in a small town.
Towns,
and on the other hand, they should not be very big cities, because then the Goel Adam might be much more likely to visit there and try to get him. Because a small city, people are less likely to visit. The big city, the Goel Adam, might be more likely to visit for some other reason. You visit the big city sometimes. And then once he's there, he'll realize to himself, hey, the guy who killed my father or brother or whatever is here, let me get him. There's also an idea. Some of the Mephoshim say the vote is that if you're in a medium sized town, ala yoris benenius, it should be a middle sized town. Then the resident know who's coming and going. Therefore, you the will know. Hey, this guy is coming to town. I remember now. He's the relative of the guy I killed, b'shogeg, and therefore I'd better hide. As opposed to if it's a big city, you don't know where people are coming and going. You don't know to look out and protect yourself. Eli Yoris Benenius, so they have to be average-sized cities. So you're telling me the Pasuk is listing Kedesh as one of the walled cities, as one of the big walled cities in the land of Naphtali. So how can it be an Ir Mikvot? I'm Rabbi Yosef Tauti Kedesh Avoy. So Rabbi Yosef says, because there were two cities called Kedesh. Rav Ashi says
the walled city could not be an Ir Mikvot.
That's what we're saying. Like tracking Gerlim, yeah. It cannot be big.
It means big cities.
Rav Ashi says big cities have a wall. Rav Ashi could go to Slikum Vakra to Slikum. I can give you an example of that. For example, you have there's a city in Bava called Slikum, or Slikus probably whatever, which is a big walled city. And nearby there's a village called Vakra to Slikum. Near it there's a village called Akra to Slikum. So in the same way, then therefore you can have the big city of Kedesh, and then nearby it the small city of Kedesh. So the small city of Kedesh, the average-sized city of Kedesh, whatever, would be the one that was the Ir Mikvot. Near it was the big city of Kedesh, that would be the walled city that's mentioned in Sefer Yehoshua. Good. Getting back to what we just said, then let's analyze that a little. We said, We said the Ir Mikvot should not be little villages, they should not be big cities.
Neither small nor big.
El Ayoris Benedias, they should be average-sized cities. The Ein Meshivin Osim Elam Mekoy Mayim. Also, you only designate cities as Ari Mitzvot if they have a water supply. The Ein Shemayim Avin LeMayim. And if there is no water supply, for example, Rashi says when they originally designated these cities in Yeshua's times, if they found after having designated the city, they realized it didn't have a reliable water supply, moving inland mine, then fine. They dig canals or whatever to bring outside. So this way, the Ratzeach B'Shogeg doesn't have to go outside the city and put himself there. That's obvious. I mean, but
they used to supply them.
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, your average city in those days had fields surrounding it, which would where they'd produce food that the people of the city would eat.
Not necessarily water. Okay.
Yeah. The Ein Meshivinosa Amav Mekem Shavakim. Okay, here's your thing about food. You only set up the Olin Mitzvot in places where there are markets so that they can find, so the guy will be able to buy food. The Ein Meshivinosa Amav Mekem Uchlusin. You only set them up in a place where there's a large Uchlusin means crowds. Where there's nearby villages and nearby settled areas or whatever. This way it actually explains. This way you don't want the Goel Adam to be able to come and attack the city with a whole army. So like this, there should be nearby places, there should be nearby villages or whatever that can come to the defense of the city. I think, in fact, actually, Mephoshim say, it might even be that Amram says, I don't remember, that that's also the reason behind what we just said, that the Orem Mithlot shouldn't be walled cities because you don't want the Goel Adam to come with a whole army and besiege it.
That it would be better if it was a walled city.
No, because then you could besiege it and cut off its food supplies. As opposed to if it's an unwalled city, it's not as easy to mount an effective siege.
But you could just walk in and
yeah, but then are you going to go do a house to house search for the guy? Like no, but like this you could besiege the city until they finally decide. You know what? We may as well surrender the guy.
Okay, the army, then you populated with those cities. Or those people have a right to live in those cities? They wanted to, or
who?
People in those surrounding areas near the Ari Mitzvah.
Yeah, what about them if they want to move to the city?
No, I mean, did they, which came, I mean, Ari Mitzvah came first, but I mean, there have to be people in the area of the Ari Mitzvah.
Right, that's what we're saying, yeah.
Those people want to live in those areas? Why would they want to live there?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, other than that, America is a regular city, so therefore these are just you have the big city, you have the farming villages and whatever, and you have, in other words, it shouldn't just be that it's an isolated city with nothing else around. You want to have,
it's not like living next to a jail or anything.
No, because America is not really a jail. You have the occasional Ratzeach B'Shogeg there, it's not, you know.
And also they could, if they saw some intruders, they could
warn the people. Yeah, I guess that's true too, yeah. Nismatu uchlusein, if the villages around there decrease in population, moisifin aleihem, then fine, they have to increase it. They have to get people to move to those places.
From the city.
Maybe from the city or maybe from other places, whatever, yeah. Nismatu direhen, if you have within the city itself, there are fewer people living there now. Mivim lehem koinim levim v'israelim, then you reset. Anyway, besides claiming Suda over here, by the way, there's a Yerushalmi says, I think also, or the Deceptor or something, that you also shouldn't sell their things like glassware, because then, not so much because it can be used as weapons, because then the Goel Adam is more likely to come there to buy this kind of manufactured product like glass or whatever, which is very rare and expensive in those days that you can't easily get elsewhere. And you don't want to make the city attractive to them. In fact, some of them are Farshim. I think the Ritva says that's what Klei Mitzuda means in our Gemara as well. It means like rare kinds of kelim or whatever. Okay. But anyway, the Chacham say it's Mitzuda. The Chacham are not concerned about that kind of thing. The Shavin, everybody agrees, both the Nechemia and the Chachamim, she'en person b'seichem Mitzudas, will you not spread out nets or traps in the city, like to trap animals or whatever. Ve'en makshilim b'seichem chavolim, we also do not braid ropes over there. Because you don't want the Goel Adam to be attracted to there, to come there, to have reason to come there, to buy nets. Not necessarily to catch them, but just to buy nets in order to trap or whatever, to for a living. Ropes and nets are things that everybody needed in those days. So therefore, you have them sold in that city, you have them manufactured in that city, the Goel Adam is more likely to come from the outside of that. What is the pasuk that expresses all these ideas, that you make sure that the Rotschim have, that the Ratzeach B'Shogeg has everything he needs in order to live a normal life there? Like we said, that you have to make sure there's water and food and so forth. The pasuk says, V'nasal achas min ha'orim el v'choy. The pasuk says he should run away to one of these cities and live. Meaning, Ovid le'midi tev el chayusa. make sure that you arrange things such that he'll have a life there, that he'll have what he needs for his life. That he should have chayus, that he should have a life there, and he should be able to live. Because he burns there, it's yeah, fine, but it's b'shogeg. So therefore, b'chayus, the Torah wants him to be able to live over there, so therefore you have to make sure that there's... Tana, so now we learn it a b'raisa in this connection. Talmud shagola maglun rabba imo. If a Talmud goes into Golos, you send his Rebbe with him into Golos, into that city as well. Because again, the pasuk says he should live, implying Ovid Lagmidi to Tevi Lechayosa. You should do something for him, as we just said, that should be a life for him.
But
so therefore, so if it's a Talmud, to be without his Rebbe is to be without his wife.
Too bad.
No, not too bad, but that would be, as a matter of fact, the Rambam actually, a bit uncharacteristically, phrases it that the lives of people who learn Torah and what's the lashon of chachamim and mevakshei Torah, people who learn and who seek the Torah, their life is not a life without Torah, without the ability to learn from their Rebbe. There's a sicha. Where the Rebbe analyzed the Rambam. Where the Rebbe analyzed this Rambam and says that the point of it is the Gemara is going to say now that from here, one second, Amar of Zayda Mikanshli Shana Adam or Talmud Chena Hogun. So Rav Zayda says from here we see that a person should not teach Torah to an unworthy student because then he may end up having to go to the Yom Mitzvah together with a student. So anyway, on the basis of that Rambam Mevakshei Torah, the Rebbe analyzes it and says the point is, in other words, the Rambam's making a point, not just somebody who is already a Talmud Chacham, not just somebody who already knows this stuff, but even somebody who is Mevakish, somebody who's working to become a Talmud Chacham, he's working to you should realize that his life without Torah is no life, and therefore you should try to make him into a Talmud Hogun. Don't just say, well, the Gemara says over here, don't teach an unworthy student, so that's it, I wash my hands of him. No, realize that he's a Mevakish Torah, that he's somebody who's desirous to be closer to the Eibishter and to learn Torah, and therefore you should teach him and make him into a Talmud Hogun.
But what about the argument that he's less likely to become a Ratzeach if you do teach him Torah?
That's exactly the point, in other words. So the Zaira is saying over here that you shouldn't teach an unworthy student because you may end up in Golos with it. But that's because if he remains unworthy, if you don't try to work on molding him, the point is fakir. The Rebbe's point in that sikha over there is fakir. Try to mold him. You realize that he's Mevakish Torah. Try to mold him so that he will be a Talmud Hogun and won't.
If you cannot.
If you can't, then you shouldn't.
Then
right.
You should.
But even if he is Hogun and he turns out to be a Lutherish Garda, the Rebbe will go into Golos because maybe he should have done better.
Could be. But there's also an idea we're going to talk about on Omid Beis that in general made a show you Yitzhak Resha, that the Eivishter generally arranges it, that we know the famous thing, the Gagal and Tzuzai, the Zakav, the Chovai, the Chayav. So if a person is a Talmud Chena Hogun, Taki is more likely to end up being a Ritzeach B'Shogeg. If he is a Talmud Hogun, then the Eivishter is more likely, then more likely he's going to be protected from that kind of thing.
How long do you take to decide that?
The Rebbe has to, the Rav has to use his judgment, I guess, yeah.
What's the difference between Torah and Mitzvah? Which one protects a person?
Both, but I mean, Torah more than Mitzvah. We learned back in Sota about the protective power of Torah, that Torah protects the power of Magno Masla, when you're learning it and when you're not learning it, as opposed to Mitzvah only when you're doing them.
What about Nili and Hashidus, what protects her?
No idea. Okay. I'm going to be asking. Harav Shagola Magdun Shivasa Imer. The flip side is if the Rebbe has to go into Golos, then his yeshiva goes into Golos with him. For the same reason, because you need him to have his chayus, and he won't have his life without being able to teach. Yeah.
Have to move?
Not necessarily the families. In those days, yeshiva students in those days weren't necessarily married people. They could be bachur, like nowadays.
They can, but the ones who were married, they would have to leave.
I guess. I don't know. His yeshiva would go with him. I mean, if a Talmud, I guess, decides that he doesn't want to go, then he'd have to find a different rabbi. I don't know. Now, it's interesting, by the way, the Gemara does not say the same thing over here, that from here you see that you shouldn't learn from an unworthy rabbi. Different Mephoshim talk about different reasons why not. Some of the Mephoshim say that actually it is kind of implied. Same idea. If a Rav ends up being a Ritzeach Shogig, then it means that he's a no-good-nick, and Taka shouldn't be learning Torah from him. Different other Mephoshim give different reasons. Fine. What?
Maybe it's a good level,
but it's total. No, Rav Shagola means that he himself has to go into Golos because, not because of the Talmud, but because he himself was a Ritzeach Shogig.
Not because of it.
No, yeah.
because of him, the
yeshiva
doesn't go after him?
I don't know. Not necessarily, I guess. I don't know.
But he knows Torah.
No, because the point is Vachoy is referring to the Ritzeh Hashogi. So if the Rav is only going there because his Talmud was a Ritzeh Hashogi, you don't necessarily have a thing Vachoy that the Rebbe has to have, that the Rav has to have his Chayus arranged for him. So Vapashas is talking about where the Rav himself was a Ritzeh Hashogi. Anyway, different Vafoshim talk about different reasons why the Gemara doesn't mention that point.
Teaching Torah.
Yeah, so there is an idea. So actually, the Rav Chava does make that point that Eva mentions in that same sikha. The Rav Chava does actually make that point that it is a similar idea. That since the Gemara says elsewhere that if you should only learn from a Rav, he's doing the Malach Hashem Tzavakos, then therefore the same implication over here. If the guy was a Ritzeh Hashogeg, if the Rav ends up being a Ritzeh Hashogeg, you should realize this wasn't the right kind of person to be sort of been learning from.
Megaling the yeshiva, so it doesn't sound like Bal Kocha.
The Pashas, I mean, Bal Kocha.
Did it ever happen?
I have no idea. There is actually some of them, before we should say, practically speaking, the first case, Talmud Shigola Magdun Rabba Ima, yeah, it means his Rebbe would have to move there with his whole family and all, so therefore we make a point of saying that the Rebbe shouldn't get himself into that kind of situation. As opposed to the second case, Rav Shigola Magdun Yeshivot Ima, many of the Yeshiva students anyway would travel from one place to another to learn Torah. So it's not as much of a hardship for them, and therefore the Gemara doesn't necessarily have to point out that you shouldn't have been learning Torah by such a Rebbe in the first place. So the question is, Amy, what are you telling me that a Rav should have to go into Golos in the first place? Rabbi Yechanan says, how do we know that Divrei Torah are Kolot? And the Gemara assumes for this purpose that Kolot means it protects the person from the Goladam. Shenema, we know this because the Pasuk mentioned in Parshas Vayeschan, and it says that Moshe set aside the Orim Mikvot as Vesem HaMidrogim, or Chtiv Batrei, and right after that, after listing the Orim Mikvot, it says, Vezoyz HaTorah, that's implying that the Torah also protects. So therefore, why should the Rav have to go into Golos to the Ir Mikvah? He's learning Torah. The Torah should protect him from the Golos.
Not enough.
The answer is Lekasha Haba Idna De Osikba Ba Haba Idna Deloy Osikba.
He's not Osik.
It depends whether he's being Osik at that time. Yes, as long as he's being Osik in Torah, sure, that's the equivalent of an Ir Mikvah, and the Golos Adam can't touch it. But as soon as he stops learning Torah, and a human being eventually has to stop at some time or other, then the Golos Adam then he's vulnerable. Yes, the Golos Adam. So therefore, he still needs to go to the Mikvah to have 24/7 protection. The Iboy Seima, or another possibility, is you're misunderstanding what Kolton means. My Kolton does not mean from the Goel Adam. It means from Malach HaMavet. It means that Torah protects a person from a Malach HaMavet. Piha de Rav Chisda, as we have the famous story of Rav Chisda, to have a Yosef Agoras Veveirav, he was sitting and learning Torah in the yeshiva, and the messenger of the Malach HaMavet was not able to come close to him, because his mouth did not stop saying words of Torah.
Wait one second. If he was learning Torah without using his mouth, then the Malach HaMavet would have
been able to get him. Here who lav kedibur dami. We say that thinking is not the equivalent of speaking. Yeah, it has a certain mila. Fine, but it's not the equivalent. So the Malach HaMavet, or Shliach, whatever, went and sat on top of the Erez, the cedar tree, or the cedar, or it could also be a cedar column, whatever, the Beirav of the Yeshiva. Poka Arza, the tree or the beam split open, the Shosik, and then Rav Chisda stopped learning for a moment from surprise. The Yochalei, and then the Malach HaMavet was able to get him. So we see that Torah protects
the tree.
Yes. And we find a similar story. We have a similar story in Shabbos as far as David HaMelech, that he's told by the Eved he's going to pass away on Shabbos. So every Shabbos he's learning Torah constantly, and then the Malach HaMavet has to create a disturbance, and David goes out to check it out, and then he slips off the ladder and stops learning for a second. Yeah, you have a few such stories like that in the Gemara in various places. So therefore, so when we say that Torah is toilet because there's a Torah, we mean from the Malach HaMavet. He's still vulnerable to the Goel Adam, therefore Hitaka would have to run away to the Orem Mikvot, and that's what we're saying, that the Rav, who has to go into Golos, then his yeshiva goes along with him as well.
Right, we say Kotos and protects him, that he shouldn't come to such an act.
because that's not the meaning of kolet. Kolet means to protect a person from the punishment that he would be getting, or from being killed by the goel adam, by the malach hamavis, as the case may be. What you're talking about, to protect a person from doing an avera in the first place, is what the Gemara talks about. So there's magna and there's masla. I think magna, I think, is to protect the person from doing an avera in the first place, and masla protects him from the after effect, the consequence of it. By learning Torah, the Shema.
But
that's not the same. But it's not the same thing as kolot, which is no. Of course, a person still has free will. It means that it protects him, that it gives him a booster against his yetzer hara. A person still has bechira. A person could still.
Two.
Okay.